Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chapter 11, Jada Bharat instructs King Mahugana, text 2. Tataiva Rajan Urugahameda.
Tataiva Rajan Urugahameda.
Tataiva Rajan Urugahameda.
Tataiva Rajan Urugahameda.
Vitana Vidyaru Vichambiteshu. Naveda Vadeshu Hitatva Vada.
Naveda Vadeshu Hitatva Vada.
Prayena Shudo Na Chakashti Shadu.
Prayena Shudo Na Chakashti Shadu.
All right, please check.
Tatai
Rajan Urugar Hameda.
Tathaiva Rajan Urugahameta.
Tathaiva Rajan Urugahameta.
Vitana Vidyoru Vichrinditeshu.
Vitana Vidyoru Vichrinditeshu.
Naveda Vadeshu Hitatva Vadaha.
Naveda Vadeshu Hitatva Vadaha.
Mayena Shuddho Nichukasti Sadhu.
Mayena Shuddho Nichukasti Sadhu. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sarana Raghunatham Tam Jati Divam Sarvetam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Param Sagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamsa He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tata Kancha Kaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Kanamami Hari Priye Vancha Kaupa Karuvyascha Kriva Sindhu Devacha Patita
Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. and by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Mukam Kuroti Bhajalam Pandum Gayati Girim Ekripa Tamaham Pande Sri Guru Bhutiya Taranam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, the deliverer of the fallen souls. His mercy turns the dumb into eloquent speakers and enables the lame to cross mountains. Translation. My dear King, talks of the relationship between the master and the servant, the king and the subject, and so forth, are simply talks about material activities. People interested in material activities, which are expounded in the Vedas, are intent on performing material sacrifices and placing faith in the material activities. For such people, spiritual advancement is definitely not manifest. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada
Ki
Jai!
Jai Prabhupada. In this verse, two words are significant, Veda-vad and Tattva-vad. According to Bhagavad Gita, those who are simply attached to the Vedas and do not understand the purpose of the Vedas or the Vedanta Sutra are called Veda-vada-vrita. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification in opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. That's from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 42 and 43. The Veda-vada followers of the Vedas are generally inclined to karmakanda, the performance of sacrifice according to Vedic injunction. They are thereby promoted to higher planetary system. They generally practice the Chaturmasya system. One who performs the Chaturmasya Yoga becomes pious. By becoming pious, one may be promoted to the higher planetary systems. Some of the followers of the Vedas are attached to Karmakanda, the fruitive activities of the Vedas. That's what Karmakanda is. In order to be promoted to a higher standard of life, others argue that this is not the purpose of the Vedas. Tadi tai veva karma jita loka kshite evam evam bhutra punya jita loka kshite. In this world, someone may become very highly elevated by taking birth in an aristocratic family, by being well educated, beautiful, or very rich. These are the gifts for pious activities enacted in past lives. However, these will be finished when the stock of pious activity is finished. If we become attached to pious activities, we may get these various worldly facilities in the next life and may take birth in the heavenly planets. But all of this will eventually be finished. Shine punye marta lokam vishante. Vishanti. When the stock of pious activities is finished, one again has to come to this marta loka. According to the Vedic injunctions, the performance of pious activities is not really the objective of the Vedas. The objective of the Vedas is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Vedas chai sarvera ham eva vedya. The objective of the Vedas is to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are Veda bodies are not actually advanced in knowledge. And those who are followers of Jnana Kanda, Brahman understanding, are also not perfect. However, when one comes to the platform of Upasana and accepts the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes perfect. Aradhanam Sarvesham Vishnur Aradhanam Param. In the Vedas, the worship of different demigods and performance of sacrifice are certainly mentioned, but such worship is inferior because the worshippers do not know that the ultimate goal is Vishnu. Nate vidu sarvagatim hi Vishnu. When one comes to the platform of Vishnu Aradhanam, or Bhakti Yoga, one has attained the perfection of life. Otherwise, as indicated in the Bhagavad Gita, one is not a tattva-vani, but a Vedavadi, a blind follower of the Vedic injunction. A Vedavadi cannot be purified from material contamination unless he becomes a Tattvavadi, that is, one who knows Tattva, the absolute truth. Tattva is also experienced in three features: Brahmeti, Paramati, Ti Bhagavan iti Sabjate. Even after coming to the platform of understanding Tattva, one must worship Bhagavan Vishnu and his expansions, or one is not yet perfect. Bahunam Janmanam Ante Nyatnam Jnanavan Mam Prapajante. After many births, one who is actually acknowledged surrenders unto Krishna. The conclusion is that unintelligent men with a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand Bhagavan, Brahman, or Paramatma. But after studying the Vedas and attaining the understanding of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is supposed to be on the platform of perfect knowledge. So in this purport, well, first, Jadabhara is kind of, he's speaking the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is against all cheating forms of religion, which means trying to do religion and worship God for some temporary result, which won't actually satisfy ourselves and won't aim at the purpose of the entire creation. And so he's calling these people that understand a little bit about the Vedas and think that the Vedas are just full of all these different activities merely to get some sort of material benefit. He said for them, spiritual advancement is definitely not manifest. And Prabhupada quotes Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita 242 and 43 saying how there's these men that they read the Vedas. The Vedas are very extensive, and most of them are part of this Karma Kanda section, or the section encouraging just different pious activities to get different immediate or life benefit in the next life. But he says they're men of small knowledge. He's calling them kind of stupid, because if they're actually intelligent, they would take seriously the eternal benefit they could be gaining. But instead, they're just getting some sort of repeated birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, Krishna mentions in verse 12 that men in this world desire success in fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get result from fruitive works in this world. And in the Bhagavatam, in Canto 2, Chapter 3, it describes all the different benefits you can get from doing these temporary worships. You know, if you want powerful sex, you can worship King Indra. If you want good, you know, good children, good progeny, you worship the Prajapatis. If you want wealth or good fortune, good luck, you can worship Durga Devi. Like in Bengal, a lot of them worship Durga. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. If you want money, you can worship the Vasus. So on and so forth. There's so many different things. If you want a good wife, you can worship the chaste goddess Uma. If you want to be greatly learned, you can worship Lord Shiva, and so on and so forth. But all these, so the idea is that there's this kind of ladder and a system of the Vedas, and this is just the first rung of the ladder. Someone will somehow or other find the Vedic system. The Vedic system will be propagated in some universe, some world, some planet. And then someone will get some faith in it. They might do one of these sacrifices, and they'll get the result in that lifetime. They'll worship Uma, and they'll get a very beautiful wife, or they'll, you know, do something. If they want a large stock of grains, they'll worship a deity, and then somehow or other they get a large stock of grains. They begin to get some faith in the process. And so Krishna says, quickly they get you know, results from the fruit of work, from the following this karmakanda section. And so, Krishna has the super soul in their heart, and knowing that they're finally this soul got kind of caught up in the Vedic system, he actually makes their faith steady. In chapter 7, he talks about how he's the super soul in everyone's heart, and as soon as one desires to worship some demigod, Krishna makes his faith steady so that they can devote themselves to that particular deity. And then he actually gives them, he is the one who gives them the results, whatever they wanted. It's Krishna giving to them through that demigod, and he's empowering the demigod, not that the demigod is some separate entity that has some sort of power separate from Krishna. So when there's sufficient faith and they begin that they realize they can get these temporary benefits very quickly, then they begin to think, well, next life I gotta worry about what's gonna happen then, because I'm not gonna be able to live forever. There's no sacrifice I can do for that. And so they begin to, you know, consider, all right, well, now there's this nice part in this karmakanda that talks about how I can, you know, do this soma yoga, drink some soma juice, go to the heavenly planets, and you know, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you know, those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly, purify of sinful reactions, because they're doing all these different pious activities which are basically forcing them to not be dirty, not be sinful. They have to follow all these regulations, and so then they're purified by that austerity, and then they can take birth on the pious heavenly planets of Indra, where they can enjoy godly delights. But then when they have, you know, after they have enjoyed, then their pious activities are exalted, and they are exhausted, and they come back down to Marcha Loka, as Prabhupada says in the purport, which means like the planet of death, birth and death. That's basically what they get. You know, thus those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. So that's why Krishna considers them men of small intelligence, who do this, follow the Vedas just for some temporary benefit. Men of small intelligence, this is chapter 7 in the Bhagavad Gita, verse 23, worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. But my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. So there Krishna is hinting at that there's some limited temporary benefit of going to the planet of the demigods, but he's contrasting it with going to his planet, implying that it's completely unlimited benefit, and it's not temporary, it's eternal. So some of these men will, after pondering on what they're going to do with their study and worship of the Vedas, they may understand that, yes, they may, you know, become a little bit greater intelligence, and they may understand that doing the sacrifice, going to the heavenly planets, eventually I'm going to have to come back down because I'm still going to die. And so they're going to try to figure out how to escape that, how to escape death. That's the ultimate, you know, problem. You know, there's the four problems of life, you know, birth, death, and in between there's old age and disease. And so these are all, you know, everyone has to suffer these. Even if they go back to the heavenly planet, it may be a long time in between the birth and the death, and there may not be very much disease or old age, but still there's death, and they have to take birth again back down here and experience all that. And so then they explore, they begin to get interested in exploring the jnana kanda section of the Vedas. And Prabhupada says in the purport, those who are Vedavadis are not actually advanced in knowledge, and those who are followers of the Gyanakanda are also not perfect. And so the Gyanakanda section will tell you how to kind of negate this whole material world and avoid these problems, but some people will not get the complete picture, and they might get caught up in the impersonal feature. In chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how a person might be thinking when, you know, when they're going to study the Jnana Kanda. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. So misery comes from having material senses, it comes from having a material body. And so many people, like the Buddhists, this is like where the end of their preaching is. They'll, you know, basically everything that I've said up to there, the Buddhists would agree with. But then they say, let's void everything out. That's it. You just have to, you're nothing, everything is nothing, and you have to somehow understand that. And that's the way to solve your problem. But that's not, you know, that's not a way to really solve the problem. They understand the problem up to there, but then now, if you get caught up in this, then you can't make any more advancement. You know, your spiritual advancement is definitely not manifest in the setting of the current verse today. And so, those that get caught up in the impersonal feature, Krishna also considers them in chapter 7, verse 24. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So they think that Krishna is somehow a material, some great material thing, or some, you know, meaning that it's also temporary. And so they don't offer him proper respect. And so Vyasadeva, he's made the whole Bhagavatam, and before he composed and compiled and manifested the Bhagavatam, he had made all the other Vedas, and including the Puranas, and finishing with the Vedanta Sutra, which that's where kind of what the Vedanta Sutra is, what these Mayavadis or impersonalists would get caught up in, because it's easy to understand that in terms of just solely impersonal, an impersonal conception. And so, he's in chapter 5 of the Bhagavatam, he complains to his spiritual master Narada Muni, and, you know, despite all of this, I am not pacified. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction. And so, Narada Muni basically tells him, you know, you've gave all this karma kanda, jnana kanda section of the Vedas, but you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. So the philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. Because all the Vedas and everything aims at the Lord, you know, you have your secondary and you have your principal means of attaining the Lord. And so, you know, out of Krishna, you know, Krishna is so wonderful, it's the whole purport of the Bhagavatam in every line. So Krishna is so wonderful that he made this whole system that anyone can kind of jump in, and what level they can do, they can engage that in the service of the Lord. But if they're performing these karma kanda sacrifices or these jnana kanda sacrifices without that understanding, then it's completely worthless. But on the other hand, it's actually wonderful that they can come with all their different anartas and dirty things and sinful activities, and then they can start performing these sacrifices. They can quickly get the temporary benefits they want, and then understanding that ultimately pure devotional service is where it's at. And so Narada Muni instructs Vyasadeva on how to describe Lord Krishna's glories. And so the Bhagavatam itself is described, you know, from the beginning to the end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while not different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that Supreme Lord. So that's what Vyasadeva manifested in the Bhagavatam. And so devotional service, also described in the Bhagavatam, is inclusive of, you know, nine main processes. And, you know, the primary process is being hearing and chanting. So you hear the Bhagavatam and you hear from devotees, and by that you get inspired to glorify the Lord. And so then the glorification, that glorification of the Lord is the primary method of worshiping the Lord and continuing on the path of purification. And so, you know, the kind of like Lord Chaitanya kind of showed the kind of conclusion. If someone's going through all these things, they're beginning to study the Vedanta Sutra and the Gyanakan, then we can take a look at Lord Chaitanya's life to see how actually in Kali Yuga we should do this. So in the seventh chapter of Adi Lila, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is with Prakashananda Saraswati, this Mayavadi Brahmin. And so the Mayavadi Brahmin Sannyasi, he's asking him why he's just chanting and dancing when he should be studying the Vedanta. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decides to teach him, because all the sannyasis were actually being very offensive to the devotees, so Lord Chaitanya did this to correct it. And he said, the reason I'm doing this is that my spiritual master considered me a fool, and therefore he chastised me. You are a fool. You are not qualified to study Vedanta philosophy, and therefore you must always chant the holy name of Krishna. So that's the case of everyone in this age. We're not actually qualified to study. We don't have the patience or intelligence or, you know, lifespan or anything to be able to actually do that. And then Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that in Kali Yuga, all other processes except the holy name are incapable of redeeming the fallen souls. So therefore, the chanting of the holy name is the Yuga Dharma. Actually, it is the most efficient religious practice throughout all the ages. But in Kali Yuga, unlike other ages, there is no other religion available. So chanting the holy name could be the best, you know, it's the most efficient practice through any in Satya Yuga and Treta Yuga. But because people want some other thing, because they're trying to perform some sort of cheating religion, which is not pure devotional service, then they may be attached to some other thing, and thus the Lord has made other dharmas for those ages, because the people are actually qualified to do them without getting too contaminated. But the holy name appears as the only religion in Kali Yuga that can actually redeem the fallen souls. So you should follow at the lotus feet of Radha Mulidhara and pray that if they like, they can keep us in the material world or place us in the spiritual sky, whatever they desire. But they are free to do anything, but please just let us taste the divine nectar of Krishna's holy name. You have descended amongst the conditioned souls who distribute the holy name. So kindly also consider us, the insignificant jivas, as fallen souls, and you as the savior of fallen souls. This is our eternal relationship, and on the strength of this relationship, please give us the nectar of the holy name. And I'd like to end with one other quote from Bhakti Siddhanta, Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru. To make us wholly devoted to Krishna's name, Sri Gauranga Dev, Lord Chaitanya, the combined form of Radha Govinda, Radha Mulidhara, came to this world. But if we disregard his teachings and show no interest in Sri Nam Sevar, we will never attain auspiciousness. Sri Nam Sankirtan is the best sadhana. If other sadhanas help us in Krishna Sankirtan, then they deserve to be called sadhana. Otherwise, they are simply impediments to sadhana. Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtan is the emperor of sadhana. It is the only infallible sadhana capable of bringing us to siddhi or perfection. Sadhana means practice. Srimad Mahaprabhu did not speak of teaching archana or deity worship, but in Shikshashtaka he taught Nam Bhajan. Although in Kali Yuga other limbs of bhakti should be performed, they should be accompanied by bhakti denoted by kirtan. Krishna and Krishna Nam are not two entities. In other words, Krishna is not different from his name. Krishna is his holy name, and the holy name is Krishna. Krishna Nam is the son of Nanda, Shyamasundar. Our only devotional service and duty is Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtan. This understanding is auspicious. So there's maybe 10 more minutes left. We can have some discussions, questions, complaints.
Well, you know, we're surrounded by hundreds of millions of people that are in the category of not wanting to hear this or very fixed up in doing something involved with karma. They have their trajectory, go to work, go to the toilet, go to bed, you know, this, that, that. They march to the subway, they go to that, and they come back, and they come back. And you see them day after day doing something else other than what's recommended here. So like it says there, Krishna descended. And we're, on his behalf, we're descending into the subway and the places where these other denizens reside, and we become like the fly in their soup. These guys, wait a minute, how come, why don't you guys get a job, you know? I mean, don't you have to do something, I mean, other than, I mean, what is this, you know? And so that it bugs them, you know, and it startles them that there's some other quality of activity. And that starts the conversation. You know, just like in this conversation between Mother who get a job for. And he says, check it out. Wasting your time doing this other thing, you know? Right? So that's our message.
Yeah.
We're following the footsteps of others who have brought that message. And to tell them, don't go there. Don't go down that road. There ain't nothing down there. It's no good. Right? And take the devotional service. So just your existence and your interacting and them seeing you is enough to startle them. And why do they do that? Who are those guys? You know?
And that's when they start to want to hear because they're asking questions. That's how you want to hear.
It doesn't make sense to them in their way of looking at the world. But you're not out in public for activity. Because materially what we're doing makes no sense at all. Completely without any external means of support. We're bakers. We're destitute of, like, you know, the things that they work so hard to fortify their position in the material world.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Can you raise your hand first?
Thank you for a wonderful class.
Can you talk a little louder?
If we take a look on the Vedas, we see that 96% of the Vedas are karma kanda, and 4% of that is devotional service or some kind of God realization. So we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we take up this part. So, but still, if we do devotional service, there's some kind of anartha, which is karma mishra bhakti in some way, which is you know, I do something for Krishna and I want to have a result out of it. So how to overcome that, you know, because we want to have pure devotional service.
In the end of the 10th canto, Krishna is explaining, Yudhisthira is asking a similar question. And the thing about the difference between the Karmakanda section and Karma Mishra Bhakti, in the Karmakanda section, when you perform religious activities, you perform your you basically use the Vedas to get what you want. And so you get what you want, and then that's that. But you have to do some sort of purification and slowly become purified. Whereas when you're worshiping Krishna, he personally, you know, he doesn't quickly, you know, he says men quickly attain a result from the demigods. But when you worship Krishna, you'll attain any result you want. But Krishna personally takes, you know, he tries to purify you, and eventually he takes everything away from you and forces you to surrender. You know, I think in the Nectar of Instruction it says, you know, once you've begun, you're forcibly dragged. Where is that? Nectar of Devotion. Yeah, once you've begun the process of devotional service, you're forcibly dragged. So, pure devotional service means 100% only for the pleasure of Krishna. Now, like without that, everyone is doing some sort of mixed devotional service. But Krishna is very expert, and the spiritual master is very expert in, you know, fanning the spark, however small it may be. And so, it comes from, you know, association. If you actually have the good fortune of associating with someone who's actually situated in the pure devotional service, then you'll begin to see how all these other things are very small, or at least that person, they see it, and so that will rub off on whoever, you know, it's the fortune of associating. But that's, you know, if we're engaged in mixed devotional service, then we have to find someone and somehow associate with them. You know, either it's the, you know, Prabhupada via all his lectures and books and different things, or it's some great devotee around today that we can be situated near, or some great devotee of the past we can read about. Somehow or other, we have to, you know, get that understanding and realize that it's, you know, some part of our, you know, our, we don't have sufficient sumedhasaha. Our brain substance is somehow messed up to think that we can. It's actually better for us to want to get something for ourselves from Krishna. It's a weird understanding, but then we can finally just understand how to surrender. That's the auspicious understanding.
It's so important that you're mentioning a person. It's not that we are dragged. Somebody has to be a person who drags
you. Yeah.
And he doesn't grab you. You have to hold on to him.
Yeah.
You know, you desire Guru. Krishna sends Guru. And then you access Guru and give Guru the facility to speak into your life. Or not. Some people have Guru, but they don't want Guru to speak into their life. So it's just our own personality that they see once a year. We don't surrender to a list of rules. We don't surrender to a building, an institution. You know, we surrender to a person, Krishna's representative. And that relationship is so vital and essential as we go forward. You're making a really good point there, that a person will evoke the courage to follow the person's example. The Prabhupada gave an example. Stepped out of his comfortable situation, went to a foreign country, no Lakshmi, no supporters, no place to live. What did he have when he brought with him the instruction of his spiritual master? That's what he held on to. And that's all we have.
Yes, that should be the goal in everyone's life is to find some spiritual master that actually gets enough faith in us to give us an instruction, that then we can have enough faith in that instruction to perform for the rest of our life. That's the perfection of life.
So many other voices will be there.
Yeah, with the one, Prabhupada's instruction was fairly simple, you know, it could be summarized in a sentence or two. But with that one sentence, you know, go and preach in the West, print books, that created everything. He got all the blessings from all the acharyas. Rupa Goswami personally, you know, came to him, and everyone, you know, came through in his writings, and it's obvious that he just had so much auspiciousness behind him, everything supporting him. Okay, so that means that we get the opportunity to glorify Radha Mulidhara by participating in their darshan. So we don't see them, they see us. So that should be on the
Just one quick comment.
Yeah.
There was this Christian, I guess you could say, preacher that passed by, Asian man. And he was very enthusiastic. And he was just coming up and he was saying,
Praise the Lord!
You know, but he was like very joyful to see us. You know, he was fired up. It was very nice. You know, he wasn't like attacking us, but he was saying, Praise the Lord! And we started chanting. He was really happy. So happy to meet
you. You know, we don't see Radha Mohidhar, but we also appreciate their beauty. So it's... Srimad Bhagavatam Ratnaraj Ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki.